Welcome to episode 284 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on May 13, 2022. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we cover email-related news. We remind everyone about the looming deadline for deprecation of basic authentication in Exchange and what it means for them. We also chat a bit about Microsoft Bookings, FindTime, Calendly, and Scheduler for Microsoft 365, and the various scenarios around each one when it comes to booking meetings.
May 13th, 2022, another day that Ben is tired. And there is a massive concrete shortage in the state of Florida. Might be everywhere.
Probably everywhere. Being out of concrete isn't as bad as the baby formula thing. That one really hurts, but
that is true. I have seen that.
The supply chain thing is pretty rough right now.
Absolutely isn't. I would agree the baby formula is much more important. That one did not directly affect me. The concrete shortage did. Because I currently have a side porch patio that is framed up, all the dirt's laid, and it is just sitting there waiting for a concrete truck to be available. Which is currently scheduled for at least 3 weeks from now, but who knows if we'll actually get concrete.
Yeah, so you get to look at a tarp outside your house for a while.
I do. It's all covered with plastic so that hopefully weeds don't grow and all of that. And I'm just waiting.
Well, wait you shall. I don't have good guidance for you there. I can't help you with your concrete shortage.
You know where else you can wait? Side topic, not really wait, where you can get a break. Did you know that you now can have unscheduled breaks in Microsoft exams? Well, in 3 days, you can have unscheduled breaks in Microsoft exams.
I saw that one, but I don't know a ton about it.
So I quick looked at it, and there's not much there, and my phones are ringing everywhere. Doesn't Teams know I'm on a call and go and do not disturb? No, so essentially, you're going to like start getting a button in your exams that allow you to take a break. And they're adding 5 extra minutes to all of your exams so that when you click that take a break, you can do just that. You take a break, you'll get 5 extra minutes in the exam time. Now, whether I think you get the 5 extra minutes no matter what, whether you take the break or not, it doesn't really say. And it also says you can take a break for longer than 5 minutes, but you don't get any extra time. No matter how it works or however long you take, you just get 5 extra minutes added. And when you click the button to take a break, you're no longer allowed to return to any of the questions before the break. So even if you're in one of those sections that allows you to like go back and review and change questions in that group of questions, it sounds like once you take a break, it like says, okay, that means you've reviewed, you're good with all your answers before this. You can't go back and look at any of the previous ones, which I guess makes sense. I don't want you to take your break and then go look up answers for a bunch of questions and then go back and change them. So they just kind of lock it when you take that break.
Yeah.
That's looks like about all there is to it. Looks like when you go back and try to review, it says, like when you go to the review at the end, it won't let you even review those previous ones that you looked at or that you answered before your break.
One other consideration for you, they do call out that when you hit pause, not only can you not go back, but the duration of your overall exam doesn't change, which means you've actually given yourself less time for questions. So they'll ask you fewer questions.
Really?
Yeah, your break can be as long as you need, but the clock keeps ticking.
Oh, right.
So be mindful of that. Like, so questions are weighted differently and based on the overall weighting of each question. So like, you know, you take an exam and you get 30 questions on it and those are all weighted at one number that equals say 100%. If you happen to be taking the same exam, you might get the same exact exam with only 20 questions because all of those questions are weighted higher than some other questions in there, right? At the end of the day, the total at the end is still the same based on the number of questions you were asked and the weighting of that question. So if you were taking an exam that theoretically only had 20 questions on it and you take a 5-minute break, that might mean you actually get one or two less questions. So just be mindful of how that can impact your score if you think you haven't done a good job so far. It might be best just to sit there and hold it as long as you can.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm not one to take a break. And even if I do, my breaks are like, I'm just going to sit here and I'm not going to move and I'm not going to keep answering questions, but I'm just going to like stay in my seat. I don't know. I suppose there's probably some people that just want to get up and stretch, stand up for a minute or two. But I, yeah, be aware of how that can affect your overall exam. Don't take a 15-minute break. If you keep it to 5 minutes, in theory, you should be fine because you have the 5 extra minutes. But
theoretically.
Yes. So you know what else came out this week that I saw a bunch of news about? I actually had someone ask me about this the other day.
What's that?
They were like, did you see all those notifications about Basic Auth getting turned off in Exchange? And I was like, yeah, they've been talking about that for quite a while now.
Yes, this should not be new to anyone who manages an Office 365 environment and uses Exchange Online.
No.
If this is new to you, then you got a lot of documentation to go read and just figure it out if it actually impacts you, which hopefully at this point it should not be a large impact. Like you should know very well if you're using Basic Auth within your org.
Right. But there have been some updates. There was a May 2022 update that came out about this. And like you and I said, you should know this is coming, but I also don't want to take it for granted that people are paying attention. And part of, I think, why it came out is this is coming up pretty quickly here. So the May 2022 update was on May 3, so 10 days ago already. And that is 150 days out from basic authentication getting deprecated. And I mean, this is primarily Exchange Online, right? This is not like, is anything else even using Basic Auth? I think Basic Auth has been shut down in everything but Exchange Online, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So this update, May 22, it is 150 days out. I've also started to see this in tenants where I'm not using it. But October 1, 2022 is the deadline that they announced last year on this. And like you said, there's a lot of people that are already off it. Microsoft has been watching telemetry around it. And certain tenants, and I've seen this in one, this came up in someone I was talking to the other day, is they got this notification that it's a 7-day warning that is starting to show up now in people's message centers that essentially says, we've been watching the telemetry, watching the data on your tenant, and we see that you are not using basic authentication anymore. So 7 days from now, we are going to disable basic auth on your tenant.
Correct. Yeah. So there's a couple of things going on there. If you create a new tenant today, new tenants already have basic authentication disabled. So boom, you're all set, you're good to go. Since 2021, like early in 2021, Microsoft has been disabling basic authentication for all existing tenants that have no reported usage. So that's that message center notification that you're getting prior to basic auth being disabled in your tenant. And then as of October 1, it's just going to be a big bulk disabling for it across any remaining tenants in the service. So this impacts Outlook, this impacts Exchange Web Services, a bunch of POP, IMAP.
Remote PowerShell.
EAS is in there. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah, and someone in Discord, so one of the listeners over here in Discord, brought up the SMTP auth and that they are excluding that in. Yes, if you are using it, that is one of those that's excluded from that disabling on October 1. However, if you are not using SMTP auth, it will go ahead and get turned off. And I think this is a big one. And I was initially thinking this was getting turned off as well on October 1, because this is the one that could impact a lot of multifunction devices and different third-party apps and that type of stuff that maybe using that SMTP auth to relay mail through your Exchange Online server.
Oh no, my printer's offline. Nobody uses the printer anymore anyway. It doesn't, so it's okay.
That one will survive the October 1 turnoff deadline.
Well, only if you're actively
only
using
it. Only if you're using it. If you're not using it and it gets shut off, I don't believe there's a way to turn it back on. I don't know that they really clarified that on if it gets disabled because you're not using it, and then you decide you want to use it, if there's a way to turn it back on.
I don't know about that one. I think once it's off, it's off. I can't imagine that, there's a great escalation process to get you back in. Like, right? Hey, go open a support ticket. Like, if you've dealt with M365 support, or I guess Azure support, really any support, like, you know that you're not going to get too far with that type of a targeted request. Hey, can you go turn back on this esoteric thing that was turned off? But, you know, support probably won't even know about it.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Did you see this comment in Discord from someone else that's listening, that they found out their VPN server uses IMAP to authenticate users to Azure AD?
Get a new VPN server. I don't know what to tell you. I don't think I've ever heard of that one, but
I haven't either. But I think that goes to show with this particular update that you don't really want to wait till October 1 to figure out everywhere that this could potentially be used or things this could impact in your environment. Because it could be, I mean, people running third-party mail apps on mobile devices, maybe certain devices in your organization that are running an old version of Outlook 2013, Outlook 2010, services, third-party apps that you have. We mentioned SMTP auth, but if you have another third-party app, ticketing systems that are still using IMAP or POP or some of the Exchange Web Services stuff, there's a lot of potential breaking points, I would say, with this within an organization.
Yeah. The good news is you should know if you're doing it. The bad news is if you're doing it, you've got to go remediate all that stuff.
You should. Should being that iterative word there. There are a couple articles. You can also go use, the biggest one they say to use, I can't find it right now, is use your Azure AD sign-in reports. There it is. Check your Azure AD sign-in reports. This is going to give you that picture of basic auth usage in your tenant. So if you haven't gone and looked at that, I highly recommend doing that sooner rather than later to see if there's something unexpected, like a VPN that is using IMAP in your environment.
Yeah. Just keep in mind to like get at the logs and export them, particularly like export. You know, you want to send those logs streaming through to maybe like Azure Monitor and a log analytics workspace so they're easier for you to query on an ongoing basis. That requires premium licensing for Azure AD. So hopefully you got one or two of those kicking around.
Yeah. Is that one of those? I think that's one of those that, this is not an endorsement of violating any terms of service, but if you have one Azure AD premium license, I think you can probably export them.
Yes. Yeah. That should be enough to get you there. But if you're like a big org and you're just trying to download those logs through a web browser, there's a very good chance that it just times out and never completes.
I would agree. So go check out those articles. Go check out that May 2022 update. Keep an eye on your message center for when that disabling of it may hit your tenant, because it also may come sooner rather than later. And hopefully if it does come sooner, you're not using it, because that's what Microsoft is trying to do, is watch that telemetry and only turn it off earlier if it is not in use.
It will not get yanked out from underneath you if you are using it. So maybe take solace in that as well, at least up to October. Good luck.
Yes. And then after October, they say they're going to start turning it off. I don't know how long it's going to take them. October 1 is just when it's going to start. I would imagine it would probably go pretty quick once they did it.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's like a super large number of tenants that are still running in that configuration at this point, but it's probably some of the more gnarly ones, like as far as number of users, deployed services, things like that.
Yeah, I see. And I would say the same thing, that I wouldn't think there's that many. But at the same time, I'm always shocked. For instance, the person I was talking to last night about it, he's like, oh yeah, I have a client that we've used like hundreds of app passwords in various places for this client, because they're running super old versions of Outlook or like janky old apps. And I think being in the space we are, we tend to work with a lot of more up-to-date stuff. I'm always surprised the number of people I run into that are running on super old versions of the desktop client, or have been using app passwords in all kinds of places for whatever reason. So this is what I would be really curious to see the analytics on this, because I bet you and I would both be surprised on the number of people doing it. That's just my feeling. Kind of like, yeah, like they just said in Discord, like the Cisco support engineer asked me what Modern Auth was. I think third-party apps, this might hit more, because I've had that same experience of working with a third-party app and we're authenticating to Exchange for some reason. And again, some of it might be the SMTP auth where it'll still work, but I think there's a lot of ISVs that have no idea about this.
Ooh, that could get me going on a whole nother rant. How do ISVs build software for you where they don't know these kinds of things? Like, why are they not running the software in their own environment? Imagine that. Like, how are they testing it? How are they pushing it out? We actually see that quite a lot. Like, I'll see that sometimes, even with like the ISVs I work with. Like, hey, we're seeing this thing from a customer and they're using your application and it does blah, blah, blah. And they come back and they go, huh, we don't see that in our environment. It's like, yeah, we notice that you don't see it in your environment because you're not running it. Would you like to maybe turn it on and see what it's doing? Why don't you try that out? It's kind of sad, but not surprising that maybe ISVs and vendors that you are purchasing software from aren't keeping their software up to date.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. So, and I also wonder, we're going to go down a rabbit hole here because we can. Like some of these ISVs, you look at a lot of different software products that you may get that integrate with Office 365, Exchange Online, Teams, whatever integration points it's using. However, you also get a lot of these ISVs that not only integrate with just Office 365, but also may integrate with G Suite. And I'm always curious, like how many of these ISVs, what are they actually running for their business and running when they're like using this on a day-to-day basis? Is part of it, you get ISVs that wrote some software, they integrate with G Suite, and then they decide to roll it out to Office 365. But internally, they're really just using like G Suite for all their backend for 95% of their work. And the only time they really touch Office 365 is when they're just building their integration into Office 365. And that's why they miss this stuff, is they don't use, to your point, they don't really use their own integration on a day-to-day basis.
It happens probably more often than any of us would like to admit. There are a ton of use cases out there, like exactly that situation. Like, hey, we use Google, we use WebEx, we use Zoom, we don't use Teams for this, we don't use Exchange for this. Like, you get that a whole lot. Like, I know in a lot of the partner meetings that I hop on, one of the very first things that happens is everybody says, like, hey, can we not use Teams for this meeting? Like, we really like Zoom, or can we just create an account for you in our Slack? Like, we're not going to come into Teams and chat with you ever. It happens.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to go to another topic or bring up this other question that came up in Discord? Because this one's also an intriguing one.
Hey, it's your show. I'm just here
it's
to support
my show.
You.
Yep. You're here to support me. Okay. So we had a question. We're going live because we want to encourage more of this participation, because frankly, this is more fun to me, is interacting with those of you that are members or in Discord and listen to us and ask questions live. Bit off topic, maybe, but we'll go with it. Bookings coming to Outlook and replacing FindTime. And I was also talking to somebody else about this earlier today that's also in Discord about this whole, it's on the roadmap, the bookings personal versus booking that's already out there. So the one that showed up on the roadmap today, and I'm going to see if I can pull it up here in my mess of Windows, was essentially personal bookings integrating into Outlook to help you allow people to see your calendar, schedule meetings with you, etc. Bookings has been out in Microsoft 365 for a long time now. And one of the questions was, and then we'll get into this other question about replacing FindTime, was the difference between this bookings that just hit the roadmap and the bookings that's out there currently. The bookings on the roadmap does not, it highlights the personal aspect of bookings. Currently, if you're going to use bookings in Microsoft 365, and if you're not familiar with bookings, you essentially go stand up a page. People can, you give people a URL, they can go to it. They can see when you're free and actually book time on your calendar through the bookings website. That's it in a short answer. The way you do it today is that's an administrative thing that's set up like in the admin center where you go to bookings, you configure different bookings, different appointment types. And from an admin side, you can pick like groups of users. I want this appointment to see if anybody's available in this group or just this one or two people. But it appears to be purely an administrative or something that's done in the admin center side of it. The way I'm understanding this new item on the roadmap is that it is now something that me as an end user can do. I can go set up bookings in my Outlook. I can configure bookings. I don't have to go through the admin center or through the bookings administration to get a new bookings page set up. It's just something I can do to help me share my calendar and other people to book time on it. That's the way I understand it. Now, how this interacts with FindTime, I'm getting invaded by kids. FindTime is a little bit more, I don't know that I would say it competes. FindTime is a little bit more of a voting and booking with multiple people at once, where I say I want to schedule a meeting with 10 other people. I pick 5 times and I send it to the 10 people and say, okay, all 10 of you, here's the 5 times that this meeting can happen. I want everybody to vote or rank the meeting times that work best for them. And based on how people vote and which meeting times work the best for everybody, it then automatically books an appointment based on the results of voting, where bookings is more, I send you my calendar. It's more the one-to-one meetings. I send you my calendar, you pick a time off it and book a meeting with me. That is my understanding of the difference between FindTime, between the bookings that exists today and this personal bookings functionality that showed up on the roadmap that's coming out here sometime in the future.
Yeah, it's effectively two ways to land the same meeting on your calendar, just depending on the context. Like, do you want that meeting to be driven by, I have availability and I just want people to pick and choose like when they're going to book time on my calendar? Or am I, like, I find FindTime super helpful when I'm working with external organizations. Like, I don't want to ask, you know, 10 different external orgs across multiple time zones, when does everybody have time to do this, right? Can somebody from each team send me 3 times you're available? Like, that's just a mess. It's easier for me to send out a FindTime poll to those 10, 20, 30 people, and then we choose. And once we have quorum, it gets booked automatically on everybody's calendar.
Yep.
Just like that. Just like how you decided to not book that time with your kids right there while you kicked them out of the room.
I need to remember to lock this door.
I don't know about you. I don't use bookings a whole lot, but I use FindTime all the time. Like, it is regularly something that I use to send out meeting requests.
So I don't use FindTime. Usually my meetings, and it's probably, it's the way I tend to work. Most of my meetings are either me working with one other person, or it is a person in a company saying, me and my 4 teammates want to book a time with you. So I'm usually not initiating meeting with 5 or 6 other people. It's usually somebody in at one of my clients that I'm working with, or it's a one-to-one. So I actually use Calendly for all of that. And that's my primary one. So a lot of my clients have my Calendly link. When they need a meeting with me, they will use that and then just use like the availability to look at all their teammates' calendars and pick something that works for all of them that's open on my Calendly. And it's, again, for me, it's primarily the way I work. I tried bookings. And my one issue with bookings that Calendly fixes for me is the ability to integrate multiple Office 365 calendars in together. So when people use my Calendly link, they're actually looking at my availability across like four different calendars because I cannot manage to keep all of my appointments on one calendar.
Yeah. You know, I don't know why that hasn't come to FindTime. I think I remember a time when they talked about FindTime going away and then it just kind of came back and it's still been hanging out. Like it hasn't had any meaningful new features on it for a while, but it certainly hasn't been announced that it's like just on the chopping block and going away for good as well. But it is one of those limitations. Like it's built around single calendar experiences, be it your personal calendar or even something like a team calendar. You know, like, hey, I have an Office 365 group or a Teams team that has the whole group behind it and that has its calendar associated with it. Do I go ahead and turn on bookings for that so that people can book time with my team? It's only ever taking into consideration that one Outlook calendar. It's not considering holistically, like, what's the availability of each person who's in this team to actually book those things out?
Yeah. And wasn't there one of those that was coming? And maybe somebody in the chat can help too. There's another, it wasn't FindTime and it wasn't bookings. There was another calendar scheduling service that Microsoft rolled out that they were going to start charging like $5 or $10 for a month per user. And I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember that one either.
I'm going to have to find it. There was another one.
You used to have the Cortana integration for your calendar and all that.
I think that might be the one.
Like there was like the Cortana.help.
Is that the one that might be the one they started charging for? There's another one out there. I know that I looked at it and I saw they were going to start charging for it. And I couldn't believe anybody would actually pay for it.
Yeah. I think it's the Cortana one that's built in. So like the whole, that AI driven engine behind it. And that was free when it started, but then that whole digital assistant thing, it's called Scheduler.
That's what it was. Thanks.
Yes. It's a service that lets you delegate meeting and appointment scheduling to Cortana, your digital personal assistant.
And you can pay your digital assistant $5 a month or $10 a month.
Yes. per user cheap. Per month.
Cheaper than a real assistant? I don't know. I'm not going to go down that road of paying bots instead of paying people. Yes, meeting scheduler. Here you go. For anybody in the chat that's interested. Oh, Sean beat me to it in chat. Or not Sean beat me to it in chat. Yeah, that's another one. So, always interesting. But hopefully that clears up bookings, personal bookings as it exists today. FindTime. And then if you want an AI bot to do it for you, scheduler. Four ways to book a calendar appointment with people with different use cases in different price points. And then if you don't want any of those and you need multiple calendars, Calendly is what I use. Fantastical actually rolled out this ability as well. They now have a open so you can integrate. That one's nice because you can integrate across a whole boatload of different calendars. I've used that one as well.
Yeah, so that's from the folks at FlexiBits.
Yes, another nice service. But I think that wraps it up for today, Scott.
That does wrap it up. And we'll be back pretty shortly.
Yes. We're out of it today. I'm out of it today.
I started doing that and I was like, I shouldn't do that because we're in episodes out of order thing right now. And it's going to be all weird. So I should just shut up. Marco, cut this and then put the next part in.
And put the next part in. I don't have the next part up yet. But yes, we will. There is an episode coming up. We will be talking. I will help you out, Scott. We will have an episode coming up shortly with Around Bicep. If you are in Discord, if you're part of our podcast membership, that interview will happen. For those of you listening right now, you'll be able to listen live to that on Monday. For those of you that are hearing the recorded version, the interview's long since come and gone.
Yeah, go back to a previous episode.
Yeah, go back.
I hate these out of time ones. I get all confused.
It's all kind of weird.
It's your fault for talking about calendars.
Calendars? Yeah, maybe calendars would help us with this. I don't know. But all that being said, if you do have a question you want to ask us about in future episodes, reach out to us on Twitter at MSCloudITPro, or you can go through the MSCloud IT Pro podcast members Discord, which is where a lot of our dialogue came from today, was the people listening live. That's where you'll be able to hear this upcoming episode live. And you can do that by signing up for monthly membership. That monthly membership gives you access to the Discord for chatting, participating during the show, access to our To the Cloud streams on YouTube, where we dive into more of this stuff, configuring and using features and services in Azure and Office 365. So if you do want to learn more about membership, you can go to MS Cloud IT Pro podcast or mscloudITpro.com/membership. And thank you all so much who has supported the show already. And thanks to our sponsor, IntelliJink. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.